WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Major General Jean Holm ended her career as the highest-ranking woman ever to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces. From 1965 to 73, she directed the WAF, Women in the Air Force. She served as Special Assistant for Women to the President during the Carter and Ford administrations. General Holm is the author of Women in the Military, An Unfinished Revolution. Now that women are allowed to fly combat missions, Holm would like to see women allowed on combat ships. In fact, she says that sexual harassment in the military won't end until that happens. She told me why.
Because women are not required to be exposed to the same risks that men are, yet they collect the same pay and take the same training, it's alleged that the women really aren't full citizens of the military. They're second-class citizens. And they have to be protected, that they are not to be subjected to the same risks as the men, even though they have the same training that the men have. And I think in that regard, it is the basis often for snide comments from the men. Well, you're not really part of this team, because when the going gets tough, we have to go, but you don't. And so it puts them in a separate category.
Were there ways that you were, quote, protected while you were in the military that really annoyed you, you know, that you really just didn't want?
Well, I grew up in a different environment.
Mm-hmm.
In our society. The things we're talking about here now were things that were not talked about 10, 15 years ago. I was faced more with institutional discrimination that was written into the laws and policies that have long since been eliminated. For example, we could not hold certain kinds of jobs. Most of the jobs in the military were closed to women. Certainly the best jobs were closed to women by policy and by law. I could not be promoted above lieutenant colonel unless I occupied the position of the head of one of the women's components. I certainly could not be promoted to general officer. I was not allowed, I could not have children. I could not marry a man with children, or they would discharge me. I mean, those were the kinds of policies we lived under until about 20 years ago.
So you had to build your personal life around what the military would allow?
Either that or get out, yes.
So what personal decisions, if I may ask, did you make so that your life would be consonant with the military's rules?
Well, you make those decisions as they come along. And certainly it was clear to me that when at one point when I was considering marrying a man with small children, that I had to, and I was a lieutenant colonel and being considered for full colonel, I had to make the decision as to whether I would sacrifice my career.
So you decided not to get married?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any regrets about that?
No, not really. I think I probably made the right decision. I think I probably would not have made a very good wife or mother, frankly. I really think that the military has been very good to me, and I've enjoyed my assignments, and I've enjoyed everything they've allowed me to do.
Why did you enter the military?
Well, because there was a war on. This was, we're talking 1942. At the time that the Army opened opportunities for women, it was the first service to do so. My two brothers had already joined the Navy to participate in the war, and the entire country was excited about doing something for the war effort. And joining the military was something that seemed a very logical thing for me to do, so that's why I did it. Certainly not with any intention of ever making a career out of it, because under the laws in those days, that would not have been possible.
I believe you started your military career driving a truck.
Yes, in the Army.
Something now which wouldn't be at all an unusual thing for a woman to do, but, you know, women truck drivers were very unusual in the 1940s when you joined the military.
No, not so.
What?
No, we're talking World War II. You see, people have forgotten that in World War II, with the manpower shortages we had in this country, women were doing all kinds of things they had not done before. The stories of Rosie the Riveter are not a figment of anyone's imagination. Women had taken over many of the factories and were doing all kinds of jobs that women had not done before. And truck driving and bus driving, heavy equipment operation, all of those things were being done by women for the first time.
Did you feel that men had any stereotypes of you because you were a woman in the military?
Oh, yes. And not just men. Civilians in general also carried misconceptions about women in the military and what they were doing.
What were the stereotypes?
Well, the stereotypes were that, well, if you were if you're in the military, you must be, you're immediately suspect. The phrase we used in those days was a loose woman, or you must have, there's something about you sexually that may be devious. Why would a woman want to be in an all-men's organization?
Now, you became the director of the WAF, Women in the Air Force.
Yes. Uh-huh.
What was your job as the director of that? What was the responsibility of the women in the Air Force?
Well, in those days, although the women were not in a separate corps in the Air Force, as they were, the Army women were in a separate corps in those days, but the women in the other services were not. But we had a structure that was called the Women in the Air Force, which was basically kind of an ombudsman structure that helped take care of issues that were unique to women and to ensure that they had adequate housing and clothing and to intercede if women were having difficulties of various kinds. But it was not a command function. I was basically a policy advisor in the Air Force headquarters.
You say that the director of the Women in the Air Force was a constant burr in the saddle of the other personnel agencies.
That's correct.
And that the survival of the office was remarkable, considering its peculiar status within the Air Force.
Yes.
Why?
Well, because whatever we did, there was a counterpart in the Air Force that should have been dealing with it. For example, if I was involved in uniform problems, there were offices and agencies within the Air Force that dealt with uniform problems. But they were more concerned and almost totally concerned with men's uniform issues and would ignore the women's uniform issues. The same thing was true in terms of housing. Women had some unique housing requirements that the people would tended not to plan for. And when it came to personnel assignments, the people who assigned military personnel should have been equally interested in assigning men and women. But they concentrated most of their time on the assignment of men. So whenever I got involved in any of those issues, I was, of course, stepping on their toes. Meanwhile, though, I'm helping them solve their problems. So we were always in conflict with one another in that regard.
In all your years in the military, is there any one particular issue pertaining to women that you really stuck your neck out the most for, that you really pushed the hardest for?
No, I can't say so. I'd say that there was a particular issue other than, yes, I think probably the issue of women with children. I think I stuck my neck out farthest on that to get rid of the policy that required women who married a man with children had to be forced out. Now, maybe it was because I had a personal experience with it. But also, as director of women in the Air Force, I came up against that issue when meeting military women who were saying, they're discharging me. I have 18 years in the Air Force, and here I am. I want to get married, and I can't get married because of this policy. Either that or I've got to get out. And there's a great deal of resentment on that score, and so I really went to bat on that one. Also, there was another one, that is women pilots. I felt for a long time that women ought to be pilots in the Air Force. And I testified to that effect on Capitol Hill, and I told the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and I told the Secretary of the Air Force that I really thought that there was no good reason why women should not be flying Air Force airplanes. It happened, but after my watch, after I'd retired.
After the Gulf War, many women in the military came forward to testify about how they were sexually harassed.
Well, not many. There were, you know, when you consider there were 40,000 women over there, you're talking in terms of maybe about 25 women.
Right. So put into context, you don't think that's really a lot.
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I am concerned that because the press focused on it so much, that there was a misconception conveyed to the American public that military men are constantly preying on the military men in their units, and it simply is not so. My experience has been, and my observations have been, that the women in the military are treated in general far better than they are in most civilian occupations in our country, and particularly those occupations that are dominated by men. I would feel safer, and a young woman would feel safer, on a military installation anywhere in the world than she would be in the center of any major city in this country.
What would you like to do if you were in the military today?
Fly fighters.
Why?
Because that's the one thing I would want most to have done when I was young. I wanted more than anything else to be a flyer, and particularly to fly combat fighters. And I'd always loved flying and wanted to do it, but it was clear to me that the Air Force was not going to allow that. I regret that the Air Force did not come around to that sooner in my young days.
Major General Jean Holm is the author of Women in the Military, An Unfinished Revolution. This is Fresh Air.